as the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza continues for 162nd day, a new airstrike on a refugee camp kills at least 36 Palestinians. Israel's Netanyahu rejects Hamas's new ceasefire proposal, pressing on with his plans to invade Gaza's southern city of Rafah. And Palestine's Islamic Jihad deputy leader slams a U.S. offering of limited aid to Gaza while delivering unlimited lethal weapons to Israel. Dozens more Palestinians are killed as the Israeli regime continues ahead with its genocidal campaign on Gaza, now in its 162nd day. And the latest airstrikes, the Israeli military has targeted Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, leaving at least 36 people dead. Many people were also killed or injured in yet another bombing of Rafah, a southern city that once Israel designated as safe for Palestinians. Rafah has been targeted frequently amid the regime's threat that it will conduct a ground operation there. Since the onset of the Israeli war on Gaza in early October, over 31,500 Palestinians have been killed, most of them women and children. Our correspondent joined us earlier from a central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah with an update on the situation in the besieged territory.
Actually, the Israeli massacres were continued and were continued over the last night as the swinging Israeli attacks continued and maintained over several areas of Gaza Strip, from Beit Hanun city in the north to Rafah city in the south. Continuous Israeli airstrikes harvested more lives of the Palestinian civilians. Let's begin from the central area of Gaza Strip, as the Israeli occupation warplanes carried out several Israeli airstrikes against the residential buildings. At least four residential buildings were destroyed in the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. At least 37 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed in Al-Nusayrat after the Israeli occupation forces targeted a residential building in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. As you can see here, the scene in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, the people are gathering to mourn those people and to take these dead bodies to their last destination after the Israeli occupation forces mercilessly massacred them while they were inside their houses. These are the dead bodies of those Palestinian civilians, including the women, children, and elderly. They were massacred over the last night in Al-Nusayrat and Deir al-Balah city. So it's the same scene, it's the same crime reiterated on a daily basis by the Israeli occupation forces. So it's another crime added to the continuous record and continuous Israeli crime.
Israel's genocidal war in Gaza has cast a somber tone over this year's holy month of Ramadan. The Palestinians there are in dire need of food, grappling with devastating impacts of unrelenting Israeli bombardment and a crippling siege. Our correspondent in Gaza has spoken to some displaced Gazans about their plight.
I was displaced after the Israeli forces attacked our neighborhood. As you can see, we live in these tents made of plastic and fabric. We have nothing to eat but some canned food, which is the only thing that we have been eating for roughly 6 months. We don't even have gas to cook. I have six children and I don't know what to feed them.
I have been displaced from the Nusayrat refugee camp. I have five children. I came from Algeria to visit Gaza and then the war erupted. I hadn't expected that the situation could be as bad as it is. The situation is beyond catastrophic here, as people can barely find food, especially in this holy month of Ramadan.
This Ramadan is completely different from previous years. My five kids and I have been displaced from Gaza City while my husband is still there. We have no source of food. The amount of food provided by charities is also scarce. We're devastated and deprived of our basic needs.
I live here with my eight children. Our lives are tragic. The situation is getting worse day by day. We're struggling to cope with this unbearable condition amid the relentless bombardment and bloodshed. In Ramadan, we are completely relying on the food provided by donors. Sometimes the food is scarce and we get nothing to eat. Eating canned food has also made us sick.
We have been displaced from northern Gaza. There are seven of us living here. We are suffering a lot. The weather is too cold and there are no gas supplies. Because of that, I have to make a fire to cook food. Most of the time, I find no food or milk for the children. They always cry and get sick. The Israeli war has destroyed everything in Gaza.
The Israeli Prime Minister has rejected a ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that includes the release of the regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Benjamin Netanyahu's office issued the statement following a war cabinet meeting in Tel Aviv. However, the statement said a delegation will leave for Qatar to discuss Israel's position on a potential agreement. It also said Netanyahu had approved plans for military operation in Rafah, the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. Earlier, Hamas said under its proposal, occupying forces have to leave Gaza. Hamas also said its proposal include return of displaced Palestinians to their homes and to provide them with aid. Exchange of Palestinian abductees along with Israeli captives held in Gaza was also included. A representative with the United Nations Population Fund for Palestine has expressed deep concerns about the situation of newborn infants in Gaza amid ongoing Israeli onslaught.
I'm personally leaving Gaza this week terrified for the 1 million women and girls of Gaza, 650,000 of reproductive age, of menstruating age, and most especially for the 180 women who are giving birth every single day in Gaza. We need to have unfettered access, safe, at scale, with multiple entry points. So there's a lot more conditions on the ground that would need to be provided to ensure that the assistance can get to where it's most needed.
Allen warned on Friday the humanitarian situation in Gaza is a nightmare for mothers and babies, with doctors reporting abnormal sizes and sick newborns. He said doctors also point to tragic situations related to stillborn births and neonatal deaths caused by malnutrition, dehydration, and complications. He also said numbers of complicated deliveries are roughly twice as mothers are stressed, fearful, underfed, and exhausted, and caregivers often lack necessary supplies. Allen described the situation in Gaza as a crisis of humanity and beyond catastrophic, adding those children should be wrapped in their mother's arms and not in body bags. Earlier we had an exclusive interview with Deputy Leader of Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement. In it, he details the latest ceasefire plan proposed by resistance in Gaza, but casts doubt over Israeli willingness to reach a political settlement.
A new proposal was submitted, which divides the agreement, meaning that the first phase would begin, which includes the prisoner swap, and we agreed to add other elements to it, which would include a withdrawal from the Rashid Street and the Salah ad-Din Square, which would allow for the return or guarantee the return of the displaced to their homes in the north of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City. The second phase, which includes the swap of the soldiers, which must include guarantees for an end of the war, an end to the aggression, and an end to the ceasefire. And the third phase would include pledges to begin the reconstruction of Gaza. We believe that the Israeli government, because it includes a number of members of the far right, will not respond, and it has maneuvered. There is maneuvering on the part of the Netanyahu government.
Hindi, however, said such Israeli maneuvering will not lead anywhere because Palestinian steadfastness. He said resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel claims to have captured, including in the north and also Khan Yunis to the south. The resistance official also highlighted U.S. complicity in Israel's campaign of genocide.
In this aggression, there is American agreement with Israel. And the American administration is a complete accomplice with Israel, despite the crocodile tears which they are shedding. So the goals are to eliminate the resistance, and these are American-Israeli joint strategic goals. So the goals are the same, but there is a disagreement regarding the priorities. America, the Americans talk, for example, about sparing civilians, but the civilians are being killed with American weapons and bombs. And some of these weapons reach Israel even behind the back of the Congress.
Andy described as an act of hypocrisy the U.S. delivery of limited aid to Gaza through airdrops and temporary seaports while delivering weapons to Israel. He said U.S. is attempting to mislead the international conscience and buy time for Israel. Andy also pointed to Israeli threats to invade refugee-packed city of Rafah, describing them as meaningless given the large extent of Israeli losses and casualties elsewhere in Gaza, which he stressed the regime is concealing. In our news review program, we discuss with our guests recent developments in the Gaza Strip and ceasefire plan proposed by the resistance group. Everyone, welcome everyone to Up News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. And now joining us for the program is Moti Abu Musavib from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah and Jamal Waqim, professor of international relations, joining us from Lebanese University out of Beirut. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Moti, we're going to start with you, if we could get the latest on the ground there in Gaza.
Yes, first of all, let me say that the Israeli attacks and the Israeli strikes are still maintained and continued across all areas of Gaza Strip. The fresh attack actually targeted and hit a residential building in Nusayrat refugee camp over the last couple of hours. At least 3 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, while dozens are still trapped and missing under the rubble. It's noteworthy that over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre against the Palestinian civilians in Nusayrat refugee camp. After targeting and hitting a residential building, 37 Palestinian civilians were reportedly massacred in that attack. And apparently, the Israeli occupation forces are still hitting more residential buildings and claiming more lives of the Palestinian civilians. On the ground, the humanitarian conditions are still catastrophic at all levels, as the Israeli occupation forces are still stalling the smooth delivery of those humanitarian aid, and they are still procrastinating in allowing those humanitarian convoys and aid to get into Gaza Strip amid the continuous and relentless Israeli air strikes. These moments, Ramadan month, actually exacerbates the suffering of the Palestinian people. We are talking about roughly 2.3 million Palestinians are still crammed in sporadic areas in Gaza Strip, in Rafah and the central area, and even in the northern part of Gaza Strip and Gaza City. They are deprived of their basic humanitarian needs, and they have nothing to eat, literally, as the Israeli occupation forces are still using starvation as a weapon of war against the Gaza population.
Thank you, Moti. And Professor Waqim, welcome to the program, sir. Now, Islamic Jihad's Muhammad al-Hindi said, we don't need limited morsels of aid. We need Washington to stop giving unlimited amounts of weapons to Israel, basically calling Washington's actions completely hypocritical and fooling no one. And you see the level of sophistication of these weapons. You heard what Moti just said. A couple airstrikes on a couple residential buildings, wiping out 40 people of a single family in Nusayrat, and all the attacks have been similar. One or two bombs, hundreds of people dead. Washington could stop giving that level of sophisticated weaponry instead of these morsels of aid. Your initial thoughts, please.
Of course, Israel is fully supported by the United States, and the United States is accomplice of the aggression against the Palestinian people. And its actions of, let's say, its theatrical actions of providing limited aid via airdrops can fool nobody all around the world. I believe that the Islamic Jihad are fully right in their approach, and the United States, instead of providing these airdrops of limited aid, they should stop their support of Israel, because had it not been for the U.S. support, Israel could not launch this sort of aggression and this sort of genocidal crime against the Palestinian people.
And Professor, targeting aid seekers, hospitals, refugee camps, blocking access to aid, using starvation as a weapon of war, what Moti was just saying, what part of this campaign shows any level of ethics or humanity on the part of the Israelis?
Of course not, because the Israelis, the Zionists, are driven by a racist ideology in which they consider that the other people are, the non-Jews are lesser people, that they should be wiped out, should be massacred, and this has been the strategy and policy of Israel ever since it was established on the soil of Palestine back in 1948. So these genocidal acts are part of the value system of the Zionists, and they are also used for geopolitical ends in order to force the Palestinians out of their land, especially now out of Gaza into Sinai, as part of the Zionist plan to take over, to take full control of the historical land of Palestine, because this will be followed by, let's say, mass expelling of the Palestinians from the Gaza Strip and even from the occupied territories that were occupied back in 1947-1948.
And Professor Joaquin, before we let you go, how do you actually break every rule of engagement? How do you commit a violation of every single war crime and so barbarically and get away with it in today's day and age?
Well, the Israelis can get away with it because they are fully supported by the West, and we know that the West has established the international law as a mean to their geopolitical ends, but not as a law to be enforced on everybody all around the world.
All right, thank you, and stay safe, Professor Joaquin there. And also earlier, we were joined by Moti Abu Musabe, our correspondent, joining us from the besieged Gaza Strip. And that was Professor Jamal Joaquin, professor at International Relations at Lebanese University, joining us out of Beirut. That brings us to the end of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now. That's it for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding.
IRIB English Radio.
In the modern era, man has reached ever new technological heights unprecedented in history. We can now communicate and interact with those halfway around the world with ease, manage workloads with a click of a finger, or access information and news in a matter of seconds. Perhaps a world without electronic technology would be unimaginable. But this miraculous blessing has a very, very dark and toxic underbelly. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. The electronic technology we are so dependent on creates waste unseen in the Earth's history. Every year, up to 50 million tons of electronic waste, computers, television sets, mobile phones, and household appliances are thrown away by consumers in the developed countries. 75% of this waste disappears from the legal recycling circuit, much of it dumped illegally in the third world. Stay with us as this week's documentary spans the world to reveal how greed and corruption are ruining the globe's legal recycling systems, damaging the environment, creating security risks, and endangering human health.
We produce up to 50 million tons of e-waste every single year, and our discarded appliances increasingly end up in places like the dump site in Africa. We first came here 3 years ago, while risking serious health problems such as cancer and brain damage. Since then, the situation has worsened dramatically. The amount of e-waste coming into Africa has almost doubled. And also in Europe, South America and Asia, the discarded symbols of our modern lifestyle are corroding landscapes and poisoning the soil, water and air.
It's a crime. I mean, this is a crime of mammoth proportions.
E-waste trafficking is huge and said to be bigger than the drugs trade. Even though the export of e-waste has been banned for more than 30 years, thousands of e-waste containers cross the oceans every year. And the toxic tide is set to rise even further, because in spite of the crisis, the sale of electronics is booming and emerging markets are coming on board. All contribute to a growing mountain of e-waste to which we can no longer turn a blind eye.
It's like a doctor looking at a patient who's bleeding profusely and saying, oh, it's not so bad. When I hear people like that, I say, just go. Just take a plane and go look for yourself and tell me that's not a problem.
All over the world, law enforcement, environmental activists, customs officials, and undercover investigators are fighting to stop the traffickers.
Para ese tipo de personas, el futuro no cuenta. Lo que cuenta es el beneficio inmediato.
The battle is difficult to win because of the huge profits to be made and the corruption involved.
C'est tout un système de montage avec des sociétés écrans. Là, on peut parler de système mafieux.
Can we stop the toxic tide before it is too late? Mike Anane is a Ghanaian environmental journalist and activist. He has made it his personal mission to stop the influx of e-waste to his country. He has discovered that many of the computers dumped here still bear the names of their original owners in Europe and the US.
I'm looking for the asset tags or the property tags. Yes, it gives a lot of indication and provide a clue as to who owned it, who used it.
Mike told me that he had a plan. He wanted to take his collection of tags on a journey of investigation.
The idea is to take these things back to the previous owners, the original owners. And these are e-waste that belong to people in the UK. I'll ask them questions as to how these things got to Ghana, if they have any idea.
It's
somebody has to pay for these things because the environmental and health consequences are enormous. They are killing people here. They should be responsible.
Mike is taking several pieces of e-waste to the UK. The first one originally belonged to Leeds City Council.
Dear Mr. Councillor, my name is Mike Anani. I would like to come and see you to show you what I found and to investigate how your discarded computer equipment found its way to Ghana. This is the moment that I have been waiting for, to listen to their side of the story.
Is this the same all over Africa, or is there specific parts of Africa where we're having problems with it?
We have Nigeria and, of course, Ghana. Yeah, these two countries are the major countries that receive electronic waste.
We've researched as far as we can that particular piece of waste from the serial number they can date it. But I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, and as I say, at that time, I mean, the ethical, what was thought to be ethical was, we'll recondition them and give them to charities that can't afford their own computers. But I don't think anybody actually thought the thing through, that what happens when it is no longer in use.
The records of the donations no longer exist, so Councillor Blackburn can't tell Mike which computer went to which charity. The trail has gone cold. Mike tries to trace back more of the tags he has found in Ghana.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Anani. I'm trying to reach 212 regarding some recycling issues. You happy? Is anybody around?
Yeah, at the moment, if I see two teams have gone into administration, we'll be taken over by Daisy.
Mm-hmm. All recyclers involved were closed down or sold on years ago.
This number is for sale. For information, call Ozan.
After a whole week in the UK trying to trace back the tags, Mike still doesn't know who sent the e-waste to Ghana.
I'm very much disappointed. I have been to several places and the usual excuses, it's been 20 years or we give them to charity. And I find these excuses rather funny. Yeah, because it doesn't take away the problems, it doesn't take away their complicity, and it doesn't take away the fact that they are to be blamed.
Uncovering the e-waste traffic is not as simple as Mike had expected, but he is determined to continue his investigation. E-waste trafficking has been illegal since 1989, when the Basel Convention was signed, the first international treaty banning the trafficking of any kind of toxic waste. To date, 190 countries have signed it, amongst them China and Ghana. The European Union, too, has written the Basel Convention into its laws, prohibiting the export of e-waste. In other words, all EU waste should be recycled in Europe. A system has been designed. In Europe, when a consumer buys a new appliance, the purchase price includes a recycling levy. For instance, the price of a fridge includes a levy of up to 20 euros. Around 4 billion euros are collected this way in Europe every year. This money is used by the industry to run a system which collects, sorts, transports, and recycles our appliances. That's why we can hand them back for recycling for free when we discard them. Thousands of highly specialized recycling plants have been set up all over Europe. Here, the e-waste is treated without harming the workers or the environment. Professional recyclers can get a whole range of valuable materials out of our discarded appliances. But recyclers all over Europe are complaining that their plants are not running to full capacity. And the European Union estimates that at least two-thirds of European e-waste never make it to an official recycling plant. Spain is one of the worst affected countries. So what's going wrong? Belen Ramos works for OQ, Spain's biggest consumer association. She wants to find out why Spanish e-waste is not getting to the recycling plants through an experiment. Belen and her team are installing satellite trackers inside discarded appliances that could have come from any of our homes. In total, 16 pieces have been fitted with trackers. The plan is to hand them in for recycling all over the country and see if they find their way to a recycling plant or not. Soon, all the pieces of e-waste with the hidden trackers inside are distributed all over the country. All of them are sending regular satellite signals. This morning, there is news from the city of Granada, where a computer with a tracker was handed in for recycling. The satellite picture shows clearly that the new location of the computer is an abandoned lot and not a recycling plant. In a country with 26% unemployment and paltry benefits, some have turned to e-waste theft to survive. Security cameras and metal gates failed to deter the thieves. Fences are simply cut to provide access 24 hours. The copper cone inside a TV set can be sold to a scrap dealer for €2. A fridge will yield up to €10 and a system unit €4. But theft from collection points is not the only way e-waste is disappearing. In 2011, the Spanish Environmental Police discovered that 500,000 fridges had been siphoned off the official system and dumped. The case became known as Operation Fragmento, Spain's first high-profile e-waste case. A large criminal network, which included staff at collection points, recycling plants, and transport firms, had taken the recycling levy and then illegally scrapped the fridges. Their profit, €10 million. The case is currently pending trial. The final balance of Belen's tracker experiment, only 4 of the 16 pieces made it to authorized recycling plants. All others were scrapped illegally. That's 75%. But none of Belen's trackers have appeared outside of Spain. So how does European e-waste end up in the third world? An answer can be found in France. Here, in March 2010, the gendarmerie discovered a huge warehouse full of e-waste tucked away in a small town. Captain Doblemont was in charge of the investigation. So where did all this e-waste come from, and where was it going? D3E Recyclage had collected electronics for recycling from all over the region. Clients included public institutions, hospitals and prisons, and even the gendarmerie itself. The e-waste came flooding in for one reason. Under French law, companies have to pay for their old equipment to be recycled. But D3E offered an irresistible deal. Free recycling of monitors, which would normally have cost around €5 each to recycle. Nobody thought this was a deal too good to be true, because the paperwork provided by D3E Recyclage looked totally convincing. They even listed individual serial numbers, claiming that everything had been recycled according to the law. For several years, D3E operated calmly under the radar. Not a single inspection took place, which would have revealed that they didn't have any recycling equipment whatsoever. D3E may have only been a small company, but they were part of an international e-waste trafficking ring covering 3 continents. When Captain Doblemont discovered that the waste had left France for Belgium, he contacted Interpol for help. A huge international network began to reveal itself. The French monitors are being sold for between 50 cents and 2 euros apiece to a company in Belgium called Mobo. The investigators traced the head office of Mobo to Luxembourg. A truly international network was uncovered. Mobo and Luxembourg bought e-waste not only from France, but also from Croatia and the UK. They used a Romanian company for packing and logistics. The e-waste was exported from Holland to Hong Kong, Vietnam, and the Arab Emirates. The shareholders are based in the US, in Delaware, a notorious fiscal paradise. The French e-waste suppliers have been sentenced and their fake recycling company shut down. But Mobo continue to trade, advertising their services on sites such as Alibaba.com, where e-waste from all around the world is traded freely and without borders. Thousands of e-waste containers leave Europe every year. This not only causes environmental damage, it also affects the economy. This was a major reason why, in 2008, the European institutions in Brussels started work on a new, more stringent version of the EU e-waste directive.
10% of all the gold in the world goes to electronics, and most of it then disappears. And the same with silver, with copper.
Every year, Europe dumps millions of tons of e-waste, including the valuable resources inside.
I think everybody needs to wake up to the fact that in 20 or 30 years, the world is going to have a huge resource crisis. And Europe in particular is very vulnerable. We import 6 times more than we export.
Europe currently spends 130 billion euros a year on importing strategic metals, even though some of this demand could be covered with recycled e-waste instead. This refinery in Belgium extracts copper, tin, silver and gold from old electronics and processes them for resale. 50,000 mobile phones yield 1 kilogram of gold and 10 kilograms of silver, worth about 40,000 euros. Currently, only 1% of mobile phones are recycled in Europe. This means that we're actually sitting on a veritable mine of precious metals and valuable rare earths. In January 2012, the European Parliament passed the new e-waste directive. The new goal is to increase e-waste recycling in Europe by making it easier for consumers to hand back their waste and by keeping the waste in Europe through stricter export controls at the harbours. But how easy is it to stop an e-waste container from leaving? Mike Anané has travelled to Scotland to meet the Environmental Protection Agency.
Historically, it's been West Africa, primarily Nigeria, but over the last few years we have noticed an increase to Ghana.
What are the usual tricks that these illegal exporters use?
For example, changing the container drop-off point to the last minute so as we can't be there to check, or potentially having material in the first few rows of the container that are working order, but some material sitting behind that that's not working order.
Only functional second-hand equipment can legally be exported from Europe. Everything else is seized.
So do you test every single equipment for functionality?
Not every single equipment. The amount of exports that takes place and the resource, it wouldn't be cost-effective. We have to use our resources effectively.
The team use a video camera to look inside the container and to see if any of the contents look like e-waste.
You were checking a 40-footer container, but the camera was not long enough to the end of the container.
It's another indication. That's why the majority of our effort goes into the use of intelligence and the use of inspections at an earlier stage. We've already had information from that exporter to show that each of the fridges had been tested, but that was a spot check to ensure that the paperwork they'd given us matched up.
Mike is not impressed. The Scottish authorities, making the best of their resources, rely on information from the exporters themselves to stop any illegal shipments. The container was released for export soon after.
For me, I would say that the controls that I saw at the port in Scotland was not good enough. Every single item would have to be checked for functionality, particularly of the contents. If it's refrigerators, if it's television sets or computers, they would have to find out whether they are working in good working order before they're shipped or whether they're just junk.
In spite of all European laws, Europe's harbours are clearly overwhelmed by the sheer number of e-waste containers being exported. But what about a country that produces more e-waste than anyone else on the planet and hasn't banned its export? The US produces a staggering 9.5 million tons of e-waste a year. A lot of this is collected by recyclers, for instance, at so-called recycling rallies, where people are invited to donate their discarded electronics to charity.
I'm not getting fired!
What most people don't know is that a lot of US e-waste is headed straight for the third world.
If you were to go out on the street and ask people, what do you think happens when you take your old computer to a recycler? They'll just say it gets recycled. Very few know that most of these so-called recyclers in the United States don't recycle, they just export.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, my dear friends and folk from all around the world. Welcome back to IRB English Radio and thank you for joining us in a brand new episode of For a Better Life. This is Asma, and I am more than happy to be sharing today's words with you. Well, as always, I have to mention this very point that in For a Better Life, we're talking about issues and topics that are related for the betterment of human beings. We tend to talk about issues that might work like a trigger to our thoughts and to our life in a way that it could make us go and know more about those issues and topics. So let's start today's episode, which is going to be related to our improvement in the holy month of Ramadan. And how did I just come to think about it? Well, just as I was going to come back to home from the university, I was looking from beyond the windows to see what's going on in the wilderness. So what I just saw in the road was the fact that when it's winter, everything is so barren, everything seems to be dead. But as just the spring comes closer, everything starts to get a new shape. It's the time of renewal. You see that out of all those barren fields, suddenly little seeds are going to sprout out, little flowers are going to start showing up, and then the small flowers are going to sprout out. All of these things start to give you this idea that, okay, the season of renewal is just around the corner and it's so close. Out of this renewal, we come to think of our own selves, what happens in our lives. The thing is that sometimes as we go through different obstacles and difficulties of life, and through different phases of our lives, we come to a sort of change, like those barren fields, like those trees with empty hands, like we lose all our leaves and all that remains there is going to be a dried out branch of a tree that does not have any flower, any leaves, any fruit, anything. So at these very moments, we have to go through a change, through a renewal season. And this renewal season needs to have some triggers. I mean, something must happen for us to make us go through that change. The very first step is for us to make sure that, okay, at this phase of my life, I need to change myself. I need to go through a renewal season, and I have to let all those potential talents of mine to come to a flourishing moment. I have to go through a phase in which I'm going to develop and improve myself as just a tree that is going to have some fruit and some green leaves. I have to help myself go through that phase of change, go through that renewal season. So as I just told you, the first step is you wishing for this change to happen, as every other thing that must happen in our lives, and all of them need a desire from us. So at the very first, you have to have the intention to change, to improve, and to flourish. And once you just wish for it, you start to try for it. How do we try for it? Well, let's put it for after the break, and then we're going to talk about it. Thank you for staying with us.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. 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 All I need.
To be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you need.
your love is all I need.
Yes, this is For a Better Life. I'm Asma, and we're talking about renewal season. And since it is the holy month of Ramadan, by renewal season we mean the holy month of Ramadan. So, as the narrations tell us, the Muslims are supposed to be wise people. They must make the most of every moment, every chance that is given to them. So, how am I going to be wise in these months of holiness, like the month of Rajab and then Shaban, and then we have the holy month of Ramadan? Well, I have to get prepared for the holy month of Ramadan through the months of Rajab and Shaban. Like, these are the preparing months that are going to help us improve ourselves and get ready for the betterment that is going to come in the holy month of Ramadan. Now, when we talk about the holy month of Ramadan, the first thing that comes to our mind is the holy book of Quran, because that is the spring of this holy book. In that month, the landmark is this holy book. We have to focus on the teachings of the holy book of Quran. That is going to help us improve ourselves. Like, every year when this holy month comes, everybody starts reciting this holy book. And when we say reciting, we don't mean just to go through the words, though only the mere fact of going through the words of that holy book is going to actually improve ourselves, is going to improve our souls, is going to sparkle in our mind. But if we go through it with more of presence of soul, with more of metaphysical passion, if we go to that book with the intention that I am going to go for the meanings, that I'm going to take some meanings out of it, and then try to act according to the meanings that I've got from that book, it's going to be more effective. We have a lot of narrations, a host of narrations related to this holy month. One of them is from the Prophet that says, if you just knew, if you, the Muslims, knew how much are the rewards of the holy month of Ramadan, you would have wished for it to last for the entire year. So hearing that from the Prophet makes us so hopeful for the rewards that are going to be prepared for us in the holy month of Ramadan. And as I just told you, in order to get all these rewards and blessings and benedictions, we have to go for the meanings. How am I going to achieve those meanings? Well, by looking back at the notions and at the concepts that are there in the Holy Book of Quran that are going to teach me a lot of things to improve my personality, my characteristic, and the way I interact with other people, the way I'm doing the responsibilities that I have, and a host of other ideas. So just to make the gist of whatever we've been through for today's episode, I would just put it this way, that just like the nature that goes through a phase of winter and experiences this barrenness, my soul as a human being also is going to go through some phases like that. In some parts of my life, I feel like I am just like the trees with empty hands in autumns and winter. What I need is a renewal season. When is that renewal season to come to me is related to you. You must have the intention, the desire to change, the desire to go through a renewal season. Once you're past that very first step, you can go for some more of actions. Muslim people are supposed to be wise, so once a chance is given to you, you do not let it go just like that. So this is all. I hope we all can enjoy the benefits, the blessings, and the benedictions of the holy month of Ramadan. Please do not forget us from your prayings. And that's it. Thank you for staying with us until another session. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I
and every word I share, He knows. Allah knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.